of the Squawker Talker is sponsored by betonbrazil.com. It's the betting site for all sports punters with great odds, markets, and offers. Listeners to this podcast can now get up to £60 deposit matched when you use the promo code Squawker60. Just visit betonbrazil.com and enter the promo code Squawker60 when you deposit, and we will match your deposit up to £60. Also, look out for our daily happy hour offers between 5 p.m. and 6 p.m. Sign up now at betonbrazil.com. Bet on Brazil is for over 18s only. Betting should be fun, so please gamble responsibly. Hello everyone, hello football fans around the world. Welcome back to the Squawker Talker. It's the Monday pod, so we've obviously got a lot of weekend football to cover. Helping me do this today is Greg Stobart. Hello, Greg.
Hello, Nick.
How's it going?
Very good.
Did you have a good weekend?
Very good, thank you.
And also joining us is George Ellick. Hello,
hi.
George.
Hi, Nick.
You're becoming a bit of a Monday Squawker Talker regular, aren't you?
It's absolutely fantastic. What a way to start your Monday morning.
Yeah.
Start your week.
That's a very good point. Also joining us is Amar Singh. Hello, Amar.
Good morning.
How's it going?
Yeah, very well, thanks.
Good weekend?
Yeah, it was all right. Yeah, watched a lot of football.
Yeah. Well, we're about to talk about it, so that's very handy. Let's kick off with Man United 1, Liverpool 1. Greg, a fair result, all things told. Liverpool seemed to have be tactically better set up by Klopp in the first half. United rallied well in the second, some good subs by Mourinho. One all, a fair result all in all?
Yeah, I think you summed it up for me, Nick.
Okay, really. Moving
cheers,
on,
mate.
George.
Cheers, mate. No, it was. I mean, a really frustrating first half for Man United. I mean, I don't think Liverpool created an awful lot, but United just couldn't get going at all. Liverpool, the high press, United couldn't get out of it. They created the best two chances, actually. The Pogba 1-1 and the Mkhitaryan 1-1. Awful penalty to concede from Paul Pogba, which I'm sure we'll talk about. And then in the second half, I was a little bit disappointed in Liverpool, really. They did seem to run out of energy. They seemed to drop deeper and deeper. And you drop deep. If you're dropping deep and then Mario and Fellaini comes on, there's always a chance that they're going to bundle one in, and that's exactly what happened.
George, it's Liverpool are unbeaten against the top six under Jurgen Klopp this season. And he always seems to set them up brilliantly for these big games. And Some would say that they were a bit unlucky not to get the win after the first half. You know, United did very, very well in the second to sort of put the impetus on them to defend. But again, Klopp seems to have the tactical edge over any big manager that he faces.
I think just the way they play fits playing against a team who want to try and play. I think we've seen countless times this season when they've played against kind of smaller teams who set up with two banks of five, really, that they struggle to break them down. The pressing doesn't work because they've got nothing to press into the other team that have possession. Carrick being selected yesterday was a mistake. I think a lot of people were surprised he was playing in the first place, because against a high-pressing team like Liverpool, he's effectively a sitting duck. He can't deal with it. He's not mobile enough to do it back to the other team. And in possession, he's just tidy and not much more. I thought it was a bit of a game of two keepers, to be honest, yesterday. I thought both Mignolet and De Gea had great games. They didn't make loads of saves, but the saves they made were important to their teams. They had no chances with the goal. I think Wijnaldum had a couple of chances late on, which De Gea saved. And also, I thought Mignolet had a great game, in fairness. I think that Mkhitaryan chance in the first half. And also, he shut down the angle very well when Mkhitaryan went clear in the second half as well, only for him to square it for Martial, who missed the chance. It's hard to really know whether or not it was a deserved point for United. Whilst they dominated possession in the second half, it was still probably Liverpool who had the better chances. So I think maybe both managers would be happy with the point.
Yeah, Amar, George touched on Michael Carrick there, who looked totally lost in that first half. I mean, Henderson was basically showing him how to play central midfield. Another midfielder who really struggled in the game was Paul Pogba, who looked intent to justify having a Twitter emoji more than anything else.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, all the hype in the build-up to this was around Pogba, you know, Manchester United, Pogba, Twitter. They did a big hashtag thing around Pogba, created an emoji. They were saying, look, this is the guy, this is his moment, he's going to step up. And of course, we have seen now with Manchester United, they have this midfield that is set up to get the best out of Pogba. That's why Carrick was there, to do, you know, him and Herrera do all the kind of dirty work so that Pogba has this platform to play. And it completely didn't work. And I mean, I do worry about Pogba, actually. I mean, I think some of the criticism he's had since he's come here has been undeserved. I'm definitely a fan of him as a talent, but I think when you ratchet up the hype around a player like that, who's so young, you've got billboards all around Old Trafford showing this emoji, you know, You've got Fergie in the stands and you're thinking, would this actually have happened when Fergie was manager? He would have said, get out of here, forget this hashtag nonsense. You know?
What's a hashtag?
He might have also said, what's a hashtag? You know, I just thought it was a lot of pressure on Pogba and it looked like it got to him. He's still a very young guy. He's only 23 years old. And it looked like that first half, you know, he got Henderson in a headlock and pushed him down.
In WWE, that.
Yeah, absolutely. He looked like he was losing his head, basically. And I think second half, when Carrick was out, he retreated and actually retreated from the game a lot, actually, and the pressure. And he wasn't no longer the focal point for United. And I think he was comfortable then, but it was too much pressure for him.
I think there's an issue with Pogba, which we've seen in players before, slightly in a different way, but it kind of happened with Gerrard in his last season at Liverpool, where when he's playing badly, instead of trying to keep it simple and do the easy things well, he puts too much pressure on himself. Mm. And the second half, at times, he was trying these ridiculous balls or trying to spin people out of a tackle when actually they were in possession. He should have just passed it and just kept it very simple. And then Kenny just felt like he was built himself up into this kind of temperament where he just couldn't really perform. Mm.
Yeah, I mean, he only completed 71% of his passes yesterday and failed to create a single chance in the game, which is not according to his recent form, is it, Greg?
I think that's the point, really. He took a few months to settle in. Let's remember, he had no pre-season, coming to a new country. He had to settle in. But it felt like he had just hit his straps. And what I wanted was a big performance from Pogba in a big game. Mm. And if you think so far, he was awful away against Chelsea and Liverpool. He was okay at home against Arsenal and Tottenham. Man City at home, he was dreadful. Mm. And I really thought it would be the time for him to put in a big performance with United coming into the game off the back of 6 wins in a row. And he just couldn't get going. Like you said, 71 passes completed. Gave away the penalty as well, just couldn't deal with Lovren at corners.
What was he trying to do with that penalty? It's like he was trying to dab midair or something.
It's like he'd never defended a corner before, wasn't it? He's sort of just running around.
He was out of position, he was all at sea, and he was, you know, I think the putting his hands up like that was a weird instinctive reaction. He struggled with the hype and actually played his own part in building up too much hype around himself ahead of the game.
I think that's just the problem with Pogba, really. He's a very, very talented player, but he's not the most... not worth £90 million, and he's not as good as the marketing hype would have you to believe. And it felt like he'd got into a groove in the last month to 6 weeks, but disappeared yesterday.
Yeah, should Mourinho take some of the blame, George, for, you know, because very early on it was very obvious that Pogba was marking Lovren, was trying to mark Lovren and was doing a terrible job of it. And then eventually that led to the penalty situation. Should Mourinho have just said, look, can someone sort it out so Phil Jones takes Lovren or whatever?
I mean, it depends. I think club by club, there are different ways that set piece, you know, who marks who at set piece is chosen. Before we know, Mourinho may have nothing to do with it and he's going to have a go at one of his coaching staff, or it could be a player, it could be whoever's in charge to organise the back four. I think he does deserve criticism, as we've said, for starting with Carrick, but he also deserves big praise, I think, for the Mata substitution and also the Fellaini substitution. Mm. When you've got Marcus Rashford on the bench, who obviously came on against West Ham and changed the game, it's a pretty brave call to bring on a player that 99% of your fans don't want to be at the club and playing in a way that 99% of your fans won't want to, which is going route one. And yet he did it, and that was what got him the point.
Yeah, Jurgen Klopp was less than complimentary about Mourinho's long ball tactics, but 19% of Liverpool's passes were long balls versus Manchester United 20%, so maybe should look a bit closer to home on that. One player who didn't fail to live up to the height, Amar, once again, is Zlatan Ibrahimovic, who seems to wear hype effortlessly. He's now got 13 directly involved in 13 goals in his last 10 Premier League games, 10 goals, 3 assists. Comes up trumps again for Man United.
Yeah, he's an evergreen talent, isn't he? He's 35 years old. He's very comfortable in his own skin. He's very comfortable at Manchester United in doing what he's doing. He didn't give up yesterday, actually, so you've got to give him credit for that. Kept going, had the chance, and he was alive to it ahead of everyone else. And, you know, I go back to the whole Pogba marketing thing, the whole Dare to Zlatan thing with Ibrahimovic, that came when much later on in his career. He ratcheted the hype and hubris around himself a lot later on in his career. And I think they're doing that now with Pogba. And, you know, not to labour the point, but it's much bigger than Mourinho. It's Ed Woodward. It's the club. They would sponsor the tea lady if they could at Man United, you know, and I think they just need to just chill a little bit, take a bit of pressure off his shoulders and, you know, and put the pressure on Ibra, because Ibra can handle the pressure. He's, you know, he thrives under the pressure. He doesn't care. He wants to be the main man. So, you know, Ibrahimovic played very well. I thought Lovren, in the most part, handled him pretty well on the day as well.
All five of his aerial duels against him.
Exactly. So, you know, he was pretty dominant in the air, but then he, you know, he lost Fellaini for that one moment in the end. So Manchester United plugged away. They went long. That, you know, we knew they would towards the end. It wasn't a great game in terms of as a spectacle. There was a lot of long balls. I think Liverpool were suffering from missing quite a few key players, Matip, Mane, Nathaniel Clyne as well. I thought Alexander-Arnold coming in, struggled a bit in the first half with the pace of Martial, a little bit with Mkhitaryan as well in the second half. But actually, when you consider the context of the occasion, remarkable debut. You've got to give him respect for coming in and actually holding his own and not losing his head in that situation. So overall, I think a draw was a fair result.
Did very well. Greg, just to finish up on Ibra, I mean, he's 35, 4 years older than Wayne Rooney. He looks miles fitter, miles more evergreen, and he's been showing that all season. And Rooney seems to have responded in certain, but he seems to have trimmed down a bit, or is it just me?
Rooney?
Yeah.
I think you've been fooled by the new haircut, man.
Have I? Short back and sides.
Yeah. I mean, he certainly wasn't running like he was any trim. He did pretty well for the goal and a nice little cross for Fellaini, but it's the only thing he did. I mean,
he
talked about Mourinho substitutions. Mm. The half-time substitution should have been Mata, really, for Carrick. Rooney was a passenger, but got to give him a bit of credit for what he did for the goal.
I think just talking on how, you know, say Ibra is 4 years older than him, I think if you look at what made them both into the players that when they were most successful, Rooney's was about pace and power, which obviously he now has completely lost. Mm. Ibra's is always about his touch, his ability off the ball, his strength, which is something he's going to retain as long as he wants to, really. So there's no reason for his age to be a stumbling block if he keeps himself fit. Mm.
Very good point. Very well made.
Thanks.
Let's move on. Everton 4, Man City 0. Astonishing result, Amar. Astonishing result. Remarkable second half from Everton. They just completely blew City away. This result matches Guardiola's worst ever league defeat. They beat West Ham 5-0 in the FA Cup just last week, and then they lose 4-0 to Everton, who haven't looked that convincing all season. What's going on?
Yeah, I think it just sums up their season, really. I mean, Guardiola's philosophy, when it does work, this passing from the back, this wonderful, attractive football, when it does work, it works really well and they look like an incredible team. And when it doesn't work, he doesn't really have a plan B. He sticks to his philosophy and, he gets shown up by a team like Everton, who actually didn't really have a lot of the ball yesterday, only had a few shots and managed to score with those shots, you know. So, Claudio Bravo, what can you say about him? He's had an awful season.
Conceded three goals without making a save.
Three goals without making a save.
Four and six for the game it was.
Yeah. Yeah. He's, for all the shots faced by goalkeepers in the Premier League, I think he's conceded the most goals, which is remarkable. He's been awful, and yet they still persist on playing it from the back, putting these fullbacks who are inadequate under pressure, John Stones under massive pressure, instead of sometimes when actually, you know, you need to go long a little bit and take the pressure off your defence. Guardiola won't do that, and I think Everton just capitalised on that really well yesterday.
I mean, when City lose these games, Guardiola always seems to moan about both boxes, and he does kind of have a point, but your sympathy can only stretch so far, especially when you look at games like the Everton game, the Leicester game, Spurs. They lost 2-0, but it could have been 4 or 5. And, you know, at 0-0, they were in control of the game. They had the Sterling chance, they had the David Silva chance, one-on-one with the goalkeeper. One of those goes in and City cruise home. But they're so bad defensively, and the goalkeeper is so bad. I mean, you know, even when the ball's straight at him, it goes through his legs. It just always goes in. That as soon as one goes, they just crumble. And, you know, they've got Tottenham next week. And part of you wouldn't be surprised if they step up and perform really well against Spurs. But another part of you thinks, if they defend like that, like they did against Everton or against Leicester or against Spurs, the way Spurs are playing, they could rip them to shreds.
Harry Kane loves a shot on target. George, I mean, we keep mentioning it, but I saw a tweet yesterday that someone said that, I think it was an Everton fan, who said he hadn't seen a manager who gives that little a crap about defending as much as Guardiola since Roberto Martinez. I mean, it just seems like a total inconsequence to Guardiola.
It does. I mean, I completely agree. It's just he just doesn't have the tools at his disposal to play the way he wants to play, which is a shame. And in John Stones, he probably has the one player who can do it, but then he can't defend. So you know, it's a bit of a shambles. I mean, I do think that the scoreline, whilst Everton are certainly good value for their win, the scoreline is slightly flattering. I mean, the quality of finishing was really, really top notch. Lukaku's goal was well taken. Lookman's goal was well taken. Morales' finish was absolutely superb. Keeper didn't have a chance. And obviously Tom Davis is absolutely incredible. It was one of those moments that when he did that little kind of cut inside, flick back, you just thought, please, can this end in a goal, just so we can watch this over and over again.
Yeah.
And it did with him as well. Yeah. Which was,
even though Lukaku tried to steal it.
Yeah.
But it has been credited to Tom Davis.
If it hasn't, then...
There's a great Twitter account, things that are better with Titanic music on it. And that goal with the Titanic music on it is just perfect. Nice. It's just brilliant. Nice moment for him.
Yeah, Romelu Lukaku now has 72 goals in the Premier League since 2012-13. Only Sergio Aguero has more in that time. But he's overrated.
Yeah, and the former club in West London might be looking for a striker at some point, and I think it's about time. I think it'd be a good time for him to go back there.
That would be an enormous amount of money, though, Stoves, wouldn't it?
60, 70 million, but if they get 80 million for Costa, I think they can afford it. And 60 million for Oscar as well.
Is that what's on the table for Costa? Greg
is nodding. Yeah, sorry, I forgot we're on a podcast.
A nod doesn't work in audio.
Amazing.
I can't pronounce the club's name, though. Tuanjin? The Chinese Anjin? Club.
Yeah. I'm not going to try.
A Chinese club.
Yeah.
A Chinese club.
Yeah, that's why everyone just said from China.
Would Everton be open to him returning, though?
Well, a lot of it depends on his contract situation. I mean, we know Chelsea tried to sign him in the summer. I think at the moment he's got, I think, a year and a half left. Mino Raiola is going to drive a hard bargain. They've just paid Morgan Schneiderlin £100,000 a week. Mm. Ultimately, he sees himself playing in the Champions League, and you'd say Everton are still 2 or 3 years away from doing that. So I think he'll move in the summer.
Well, speaking of Costa, he did not appear versus Leicester City. Stoves, can you give us a sort of timeline on what happened with Diego Costa? Because everyone was out and about on Friday night, and there were some tweets coming out about Costa having a bust-up. It sounded like a made-up story, frankly, but then it turned out to be confirmed by lots of sources. And then he didn't appear for Chelsea in their 3-0 win versus Leicester. What exactly is the situation?
Yeah, firstly, fair play to the journalists who broke the story. They're the big stories that we're all trying to get, really. The longer context is, in the last couple of weeks, he's had an offer from China worth £30 million a year salary, net of tax, that is. So that's £567,000 a week after tax.
But you're on, isn't it, Greg?
You know, if you consider he's on £150,000 a week at the moment, you know, pushing, that's 8 million a year?
That's a raise.
And then he's got 40-45% tax on that as well.
And this is a guy who switched nationalities for Spain, even though the World Cup was going to Brazil in 2014. Exactly. So you'd think he might not be hugely wedded to Chelsea.
He's not here for London and the weather, is he? You know, he's made it pretty clear that if he could, he'd have gone back to Atletico Madrid in the summer.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of offer is going to turn anyone's head. And then last Tuesday, complaining of a back problem, just training on his own with one of the fitness staff, had a row with one of the fitness coaches, went back in on Wednesday, another row with the fitness coach. This time Conte got involved. I haven't been able to confirm whether Conte shouted "Go to China" at him, but if he did, that's pretty hilarious.
Yeah.
And then he didn't train for 3 days, and then he was left out of the squad on Saturday. So, you know, I think Chelsea are playing a pretty good PR game, because Roman Abramovich has made it pretty clear there is no chance of Costa being sold in January. They want to keep him. They're going to make him stay and make him play, which is why you saw Conte come out after the game on Saturday and play everything down. Want to keep it in-house, suggesting that the problem is an injury rather than the player's desire to leave or the training ground row. Chelsea will be desperate to reintegrate Costa into the squad, and that's why they're playing it this way, because the alternative is Costa does a Carlos Tevez or goes on strike or does a Payet, maybe either doesn't play until the end of the season or, you know, comes back and his head's not on the game like it was at the start of last season, and that could cost Chelsea the title, because they were okay on Saturday, but they can't get through the rest of the season without him.
Well, George, it was no cost or no problem for Chelsea away at Leicester, as they just, you know, waltzed past them 3-0. And Conte's always system over stars, but seemed to found another tweak to the system by paying Willian, Pedro and Hazard in a sort of fluid front three. Both Hazard and Pedro have played false nine before. Pedro probably a bit more experienced under Guardiola. And it worked a treat.
Yeah, I mean, I was at Stamford Bridge when they did the same against... Costa was actually injured. Suspended on Boxing Day.
Boxing Day,
And it worked well there, because Bournemouth dominated possession, as they often do, and I think that kind of fluid front three were just breathtaking on the break, on the counter. I mean, they couldn't handle them at all. Their movement, their ability to kind of switch inside and carry the ball from deep was incredible. But against Leicester, that was never going to be the case. So I thought going into the game they might struggle to do that, but it didn't seem to be an issue.
Nope.
but I agree with Greg. When they come up against teams who are going to be happy to sit back and have more robust defenders than Leicester, it could be an issue. They need a focal point of that attack. They need they need these wide players to be able to collect the ball from deep and run with it, as opposed to be floating around the area.
Yeah, I mean, and it's telling, Amar, that Chelsea now have more points this season than they did over the whole of last season. They had a blip versus Spurs, put that to bed. Everyone thought Costa's out, they've lost a game, this is going to be a big one, and they just completely put the champions to bed.
Yeah, exactly. Just when you think that there's a weak moment for them, or they're about to hit a blip, or you know they're lacking key talent, like Boxing Day when Kante and Costa were both missing, and now Costa missing. You know, Conte seems to come up with the answers. You know, he's been hugely impressive this season, and I think if they win the title, then he's a shoo-in for manager of the season as well, based on just how smart he's been and how quickly he's adapted to the Premier League. You know, I think Pep Guardiola should maybe take note of what Conte's been doing. He's been exceptional.
I think with Chelsea, I mean, the highest praise you can give them is I didn't really think there would be a blip after the Tottenham defeat. I think they lost a pretty even game against a good side. The problem would arise if Costa's out for or not playing for any period of time, and they've got a couple of really key fixtures end of January, start February. I think they've got Liverpool away, and then they've got Arsenal at home. I think if Costa's playing and they get through those games, then they should sit at home pretty comfortably.
Interesting. Leicester have already conceded 33 goals in the Premier League this season, just three short of last season's entire total, and it was pretty clear watching the game, George, who they missed the most. It was N'Golo Kante, who was absolutely sensational once again.
Well, I thought it was quite funny how last season people spoke about how Drinkwater played midfield with Kante either side of him. And then this time they actually kind of almost tried to do that, playing Drinkwater with Emarty and Ndidi, which is obviously a different shape for them. So obviously trying to, you know, get in two midfielders for Kante.
It didn't work.
Well, no, it didn't work. I mean, I've said it on the pod before. I think that he's the best player in the Premier League this season, basically. I mean, he may not take the headlines, he may not score the goals, but his influence for Chelsea has been the catalyst for them, you know, going to this next level. You've got to remember the likes of Hazard and Costa and everyone, you know, they were there last season. They obviously weren't in the same form, but Kante is the man that's come in, and Kante and Conte have been the two to fire them to the top of the table.
Right, Kante and Conte,
very nice.
That's soundbite. Very nice.
I mean, everyone's saying, is he only interested in Mikel Antonio so that he can have Antonio Conte in his team?
Oh, I see.
Who's everyone saying that?
Everyone.
Spurs 4, West Brom 0. Stobes, previously West Brom was a bit of a tricky tie for Spurs. Pulis had a bit, Pochettino's number a bit, but this was an incredibly dominant performance. Spurs seem to, over the past couple of weeks, really putting their stamp on the top four. And are they the best below Chelsea, the best of the chasing pack?
At the moment, I think a few clubs have had their spells, haven't they? It was City at the start of the season, and City and Liverpool for a bit, then it was Chelsea. Now it's Tottenham. It's just whether they can sustain this form at the moment. It's hard to see anyone stopping them. They've changed to the three at the back the last three games, and it's suited them perfectly. I think Jan Vertonghen's injury could be a problem for them, especially when they play Manchester City next week. But at the moment, just the system just brings out the best in Tottenham's most important attacking players. The two fullbacks, who are basically their wingers, suits Christian Eriksen and Dele Alli perfectly. Eriksen playing as a playmaker, Alli essentially plays as a second striker. And Harry Kane's in form. He scored 13 in his last 13 Premier League games. He's just an absolutely ridiculous striker. And the reason Tottenham aren't a bit closer to Chelsea is probably that 2 months he had out when they couldn't buy a win.
Yeah, Amar, it's very much symptomatic of when Harry Kane plays well, Spurs plays well. He's got 6 in his last 4, 13 in his last 13. What can you say? He's just born to score goals.
Yeah, and this is the sort of time of the year where he tends to come alive. He comes into form second half of the season. He's always been brilliant. You know, for me, the key to this system that you know, so impressive for Pochettino is Dembele and Wanyama. The two of them are like, you know, bouncers for that defence, really. You're not coming in, you're not on the list. They're unbelievably strong.
Reflective ID armbands.
They're unbelievably strong, both of them. You know, Dembele has been hugely impressive.
He's absolutely
brilliant. He's physical, but he's also got an incredible technique as well. And I think he's the kind of unsung hero, under-assuming star of this Spurs team that makes it all work. And Wanyama is a better player for playing alongside him as well. So they're really impressive. And as Greg says, as Stope says, the system just works for the personnel. And I think with Spurs, the concern would be if they lose a couple of players to injury. Vertonghen looks like he's going to be out now for a while. If they lose a couple of players to injury, like Harry Kane again, then it could all go south for them.
Yeah, Dembele and Wanyama completed 158 passes versus West Brom, more than the West Brom side combined. Georgia's fairly dominant,
yeah, I mean,
to say the least.
Just to look at the numbers, because just looking at their recent form of both teams, since December the 1st, Spurs have actually had over 30 more shots than any other team in the league.
Wow.
So I think that's indicative of a team who are firing pretty
How
well
at the
moment.
How many of those extra 30 are Harry Kane?
Well, considering, I mean, the ratio from inside the box to outside the box is high for outside the box. I mean, they are very trigger happy. Mm. But on the flip side, West Brom, since December the 1st, have the least shots inside the area. So despite their good form, it would suggest that maybe this good run of form won't last the season. And actually, you know, they're running a bit hot at the moment, basically.
Spurs?
No, West Brom. All
right, okay. Oh.
No, terrifying. Sorry. Spurs flying, West Brom, not so much.
Well, Tony Pulis said that he wants to add quality to his side in January. Maybe he should look at Berahino, who's languishing in the reserves. That'd be quite interesting. Swansea 0, Arsenal 4. Stobes, it's a strange game, a very open first half in which pretty much either team could have had the lead. And then Arsenal sort of got a goal before half-time, and then they just completely shut down the second, completely dominated. But it didn't feel like a 4-0 win, did it? It just felt like a 1 or 2-0 win.
Yeah, like you said, we've just been talking about Tottenham blowing away West Brom 4-0 and then Arsenal almost scrapped their way to a 4-0 win against Swansea. I mean, it's pretty unremarkable. If you look at the goals, the quality of the goals probably summed up the entertainment of the game, really. Alex Iwobi, massively involved. Does he get assists for the own goals?
He'll get fantasy football
but he doesn't get score
because he just tried to cross it and it just sort of looped over Fabianski's head twice.
Well, and he claimed the first one, didn't he? So.
Yeah.
It was Carl Norton as well, wasn't it, who scored one of the own goals off it.
Just went off his thigh. It's freak goals.
Yeah, I mean, they needed the win. I mean, it's actually been an okay weekend for Arsenal with Liverpool, Man United and City all dropping points. You know, maybe it actually suits Arsenal when they can go under the radar a little bit. You know, as soon as the pressure's on, that's when the questions are asked of their mentality and they usually seem to give the wrong answer. But if they can get a bit of a run going now under the radar without everyone talking about them, maybe we can see them back up there at some point. But you just don't trust Arsenal at the moment. I mean, against the Swansea, it was Paul Clement's second game. And Swansea are not a good side. I still think they'll go down, but they did what they had to do and got the job done.
Yeah, Alex Iwobi was earning a lot of plaudits playing on the left. Obviously, the two goals he sort of contributed to were very scrappy, but he seemed to be very direct football and he's been playing very well despite maybe some other talents, younger talents in the Premier League like Rashford and Iheanacho getting a lot of plaudits. Alex Iwobi has basically stolen a first team place from a lot of very talented players.
Yeah, absolutely. You've got to give him credit. You know, he's JJ Okocha's nephew as well, which is great because we all love JJ Okocha. Who doesn't? Yet to find anyone who doesn't love JJ Okocha. But yeah, with Iwobi, what I like about him is he's, like you say, he's under the radar. He's slipped into this team. There's been a lot of scrutiny, a lot of hype around players like Walcott, as we know, Oxlade-Chamberlain as well. And actually, it seems that Wenger is actually preferring him now. He's quite versatile as well. He plays the Wenger way. He's a typical Wenger kid, if you like. He's got great technique on the ball. And he was key to that win on Saturday because he was just... He was just one step ahead of a lot of the defenders, the Swansea defenders.
But an interesting one about Iwobi is when you speak to people at Arsenal, none of them, they all say he wasn't that good in the youth team.
Really?
No, he wasn't really that hyped up. There were a lot of talents that were much higher rated, but he just really developed. I think he benefited a lot from, they sent quite a few players out on loan and he stayed at the club. And just being around better players, he got promoted to first team just for training. And I think he just pushed on massively in the space of about 18 months when he was sort of 17, they'd written him off as a dud.
Interesting.
Quite interesting.
Well, similar to that, I think, happened to Rashford last season as well. He was only recalled in because the likes of Ashley Fletcher were out on loan, so who were meant to be ahead of him in the pecking order. So stay put, youngsters, and you'll get your chance.
Stay put, especially if someone like Ozil's around and you want to be a playmaker. Yeah. Fairly useful. Absolute specimen as well. George, what do we reckon to Paul Clement's Swansea? Obviously, it's early days, but he needs to turn things around quickly. What can he? There seems to be a lot of confusion about what Paul Clement can actually bring to the role.
Yeah, I mean, if he does actually have to turn things around quickly for his job's sake, then they've made the wrong appointment because he's a coach first and foremost. And you know, his at Derby he left despite them performing pretty admirably when he left, which suggests some possible kind of behind the scenes trouble. So you've got to doubt his man management skills effectively. But, you know, he's someone who, given the time, I think will do okay there. I hope that if they do get relegated, then he's not blamed and given the chops. I think he deserves to have a go at them next season in the Championship, basically. I think this scoreline is obviously a bit unfair on their performance. They obviously tried to kill the game. I think they were playing for a 0-0, basically. And whilst losing 4-0, it wasn't too bad. They were obviously hadn't coached them. I was at Selhurst Park where they won 2-1 and they looked decent that day. They've still got some really good ball players, the likes of Jack Cork, Key, and obviously Gilfie are all, you know, very talented players. So he's got the tools at his disposal. I think games like this aren't the important ones. It's going to be, you know, the six pointers that are coming up there where he's going to have to make his mark.
I think Clement is a hugely impressive figure, and you know, anyone following football over the last, you know, 5 or 6 years have looked at him with admiration as he's been Carlo Ancelotti's number two. He's obviously at PSG, at Real Madrid, at Bayern for a while as well, and you know, Ancelotti of course is an incredible manager, so he's had that tutelage and worked under one of the best in the game. It just seems like such an odd project for Clement really to come in. To come into really a real kind of being thrown into the deep end. Derby, of course, didn't work out. It looks like he could find himself in a very similar situation to Derby next season, coaching in the Championship with a team that's, you know, that lost a lot of star players as well. So, you know, I'd love to see Clement keep them up because he's a hugely impressive figure. And I have a lot of respect for coaches who go abroad and learn things the proper way and don't try and buy themselves into the game too high up. But, you know, it just looks like they're only going one way, which is down.
He'll always have a job with Ancelotti, I think. So yeah, he wants to be
it's a
manager.
Safe bet.
Also, since when he got sacked from Derby, they were 5 points off the top, and since he was sacked nearly a year ago, they've gone through two different managers. They're now outside the playoffs in the Championship. You know, it's gone. It's not like they've attacked him and they've kicked on. They've regressed since they did. So.
I think a lot of eyebrows were raised, including Ancelotti's eyebrow was raised when he took that job. Yeah, but he raises his eyebrow at everything. Yeah.
Everything. It's a game changer. Stobes, West Ham 3, Crystal Palace 0. Huge win for Bilic and West Ham and for the fans without Dimitri Payet. It is so strange that you can go from a situation where your best player, the talisman that the fan loves, the only one who's been performing at their brand new awful, awful stadium, decides he doesn't want to play, and it's a performance without him that sort of seems to galvanise the whole club.
Yeah, and they lost 5-0 last week as well.
Exactly.
I mean, perversely, maybe it's exactly what they needed to become a club and a team again, because they haven't looked like one since they moved into the stadium. The Payet situation, however it turns out, I can't see him playing for West Ham again.
The West Ham fans have changed their chant for Dimitri Payet.
Yeah, it's not very nice anymore, is it?
Extremely yeah. rude.
I mean, you can understand the sentiment. You know, they brought him over. You know, they brought him over from Marseille. They're paying him £120,000 a week. They gave him a new contract within 6 or 7 months of signing for the club. And it's one thing wanting to move. It's another thing going on strike, faking injury, and refusing to play. And you know, I think they look far more of a team without him, and they've still got some really good players, and Manuel Lanzini in particular. Maybe this is an opportunity. Without Payet, it's a chance for him to step up and be the star man. And I remember when they first signed him, Slaven Bilic compared Lanzini to Luka Modric. He's not that level, but well, nowhere near that level, but he's a seriously talented player, and I think he showed that the way he took his goal as well.
It was good to see the other players at West Ham step up, you know, with this talisman out of the picture. I think if anyone can relate to Dimitri Payet, though, it should be Slaven Bilic, because he, of course, did the same thing to West Ham in the 90s. You know,
he didn't refuse to play, though.
Well, he didn't, but he insisted on leaving the club and joining Everton, a so-called bigger club at the time, even though West Ham and Harry Redknapp were desperate for him to stay. Yeah. And that was not long after he'd signed a new contract, just like Payet as well. So, you know, this is football, and I think Bilic needs to understand that West Ham need to cut their losses and move on as a club.
Mm. I mean, they won't be making a loss either. They'll be making a big profit because they're going to sell him for a lot of money. Yeah. And a lot of people were saying when the news came out how reliant they were on Payet, and I think he's created something like 35% of their chances, which is by far and away the most for a player in the Premier League.
But Fagulli and Lanzini were excellent.
But that's what I'm saying.
And Antonio got three assists as well.
I think that's unhealthy. I think it makes you easy to play against, makes you one-dimensional. If you've got one player who you're putting everything through, and we saw that this season, he's creating chances, but they're not scoring goals. They're not picking up points. So, yeah, I agree with Greg and Amar that actually this could be... if they're going to get £30 million and be able to bring in more quality, then fair enough.
I do wonder whether, I mean, the official stance, Billett said that he's not for sale. David Sullivan was very strong in his programme notes, saying it's a point of principle, we're not going to sell him. But you do wonder, the fan backlash, the performance, whether they might just say, actually...
Negotiating tactic, isn't it? It's got to be.
Well, I don't know. They say it was a point of principle. I mean, with Abramovich and Costa, he is not going to sell him under any circumstances. Costa can kick and scream as much as he wants. With Payet, you do sense that if they get 30 million and the team's doing okay and they can reinvest it, all right, then off you go, mate. Because when even the captain, Martin Noble, is coming out and criticising his own teammate, I think you've got a problem there and it's unresolvable now.
One thing we do have to talk about is Andy Carroll's goal, which Amar is... I think it's one of the best... I think it might be the best bicycle kick I've ever seen in the Premier League.
Yeah, I think he's always had great technique, Andy Carroll. People, you know, his injury problems and the fact that he's so dominant in the air and the pressure that was put on him at such a young age has sort of detracted from the fact that he is a big player, you know, big man with great technique. You know, he's always had a real rocket of a left foot, actually, and it was an incredible goal, incredible. I don't think he's ever going to score a goal as good as that.
Unreal.
Ever again.
I think it's goal of the season, better than Mkhitaryan and Giroud.
We've been spoiled in January. Let's put it that way.
I think, honestly, they great goals as they were, especially Giroud's. But there's still an element of fluke in that you're sort of blind. Mm. You're blindly sticking your leg out, and it's brilliant when it goes in. But in terms of just pure technique, the cleanness of the contact, Andy Carroll struck. I mean, the power he got. I mean, that would have gone into the stands at the Olympic Stadium. You know, that's about 50 meters. You know,
absolutely blind.
My one issue with it, and unlike the, you know, Mkhitaryan was offside, so I think that one shouldn't be winning any awards anyway. But the Giroud goal was basically unpreventable. I mean, it's undefended. You couldn't defend against it.
Whereas,
why was Andy Carroll standing in the penalty area without 10 yards of space all around him for a ball in the box?
Well, this brings me to my almost weekly one question only. George, why are Palace so rubbish?
It's hard to say.
Mysteries
really.
Of life.
I think that whilst generally I think that Allardyce is a superior manager to Pardew, you're bringing in a guy who has completely different football ideology into a team who have been built into this high-pressing team by Pardew. You've got a manager who's going to come in now and try and completely reverse that. He's going to want to get the ball wide as fast as possible, sit deep off the ball. And that's just, you know, this squad has been built to play a certain way, and he's come in and he's going to have to try and change it now. Mm. And I think buying Jeff Schlupp for 12 million... is just
isn't bold. The way you said Schlupp there was so dismissive. Well,
Schlupp. Like, you might as well have said Jeff Schmuck.
Yeah. I mean, are they building for the championship now? I don't, you know, he's a left back.
I mean, food for thought, Cristiano Ronaldo cost 12 million for Manchester United in
2004. Exactly. I mean, he's a left back who's more like a left winger, and a left winger who wants to play at left back. So I don't think he's going to be the answer to it at all. They're obviously going to be missing Zaha for the main part. I went to the press conference after the 2-1 loss to Swansea, and Allardyce said, you know, we've got to stop sending the ball long to Christian Benteke on his head. If we want to do that, we've got to put it to his chest or put it to his feet, but we've got to stop hitting it to his head because it makes us so easy to defend against. Mm. And I think lots of people thought that was going to be his number one game plan when he came in. It's a muddle at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, we were talking about Payet and West Ham's, you know, over reliance on him at times this season. I think, you know, with Crystal Palace, whatever, you know, Allardyce is trying to do tactically, if Benteke is not playing well, they do not play well. There is such an over reliance on Benteke as this talismanic striker. And a couple of years ago, yeah, he scored the goals to keep Aston Villa up, but you know, we've seen that he's not a number nine that you can rely on. You can't build a team around Christian Benteke. He's a limited target man. His consistency is not great. His work rate is not great. When it works, absolutely. But he's just too limited as a player. And then the other big problem with Palace is they have a really bad defence. I think Scott Dan is a good defender. The rest of that defence is championship level at best.
Mm. Christian Benteke also good for a bicycle kick. Burnley 1, Saints 0. Burnley's home form, Stobes, this season is unbelievable. They're third for most Premier League points won at home so far this season. Spurs 29 are first, Chelsea 27 a second, Burnley third on 25. It's a very interesting plan from Sean Dyche in terms of how to stay up, isn't it?
I saw an interview, I can't remember which TV station it was on, and he was told it was title-winning form, and he gave quite a funny answer, I think. A bit rude, a little bit, but
okay. We'll gloss over that. But it was funny.
It was quite funny. I mean, the home form's going to keep them up, isn't it? I mean, you can throw every away game if you're going to if you're going to win your home matches. And they're not just, you know, they're doing it against all sorts of teams as well. They've beaten Liverpool, they've beaten Everton. They've beaten some good teams at home, and they've beaten the teams that you'd say they have to beat as well. And, you know, the mentality at home has been massive. A couple of last-minute winners as well, which is really important. And they, you know, they bring in Joey Barton, who is sort of booed out of Rangers, and he scores the winning goal at the weekend. Just, I think they'll be absolutely fine, and it's because of the home form.
George just started shaking his head as soon as you mentioned Joey Barton there. Go on, George.
Well, it was inevitable, wasn't it? I mean, it's just absolutely unbelievable that he came on and scored that goal. I mean, how he's playing the Premier League now is staggering, in my view. I don't think he's going to be the person to keep them up. But it was basically a scuffed free kick as well, and a deflection. Mm. I think that whilst Burnley's home form is definitely going to keep them up, there's no denying that they've been lucky to pick up the points they have done. As you know, maybe the spirit is there, and going to Turf Moor probably isn't an easy place to go. But you know, their shot data doesn't support their home form at all, really. I mean, it's definitely better than their away form, the way they're playing. But at the same time, this isn't going to be a trend that continues. Burnley, if they keep playing the way they're playing, aren't going to keep picking up the points the way they are at the moment. But it looks like this season it's going to be enough.
Yeah, I mean, Tom Heaton, with an unbelievable double save late on in the game, managed to stop it on the line. How much have they got to thank him for?
He's had some great moments this season. Just on Barton, though, he's like a bad rash that just won't leave football, right? He's just quite annoying, isn't
What's
he?
What's the cream for Joey Barton?
I don't know. Some kind of political career, maybe? I don't know. Maybe he should go join UKIP or something. Yeah, I don't know.
Be going LBC, probably.
That's God. Yeah, LBC. Get him an LBC
Barton
show.
Barton and Farage, that'd be good.
I'll tell you, the greatest day of my life on Twitter was when I hit unfollow on that account because he's so sanctimonious and annoying. You know, it's
where do you get your Nietzsche quotes from there now?
exactly. You know, he's the greatest philosopher of our time in his head, isn't he?
Hull 3, Bournemouth 1. Stobes, absolutely massive points for Hull and Marco Silva. Obviously, Hull need an English manager, but in the meantime, Portuguese Marco Silva, who's got a really good record.
Have we got reaction from Paul Merson yet?
We haven't.
All he did was tip up on Sky Sports Man City to win 2-0 at 9-4 is his big bet for the weekend, which was good effort that one as well.
He should just do the opposite of what he thinks right now, shouldn't he? Abel Hernandez back from injury with a brace, a base to build from, it seems, Stobes.
And it started so badly as well. Awful. I mean, they're not a good side, Hull, and you thought 1-0 down early on, it might end up being a horrible day, because Bournemouth, when they get going, are excellent, but they're also very bad defensively, and Hull took full advantage. And you know, we're talking about Burnley's home form. Any team down at the bottom, the home form is going to be absolutely crucial. They've changed the manager, and sometimes you just need someone to get hot. And if Abel Hernandez goes on a run and scores, you know, 10 goals in the last 15 games, it can be enough to keep them up.
It was enough for Sunderland with Jermaine Defoe. George, Bournemouth cannot stop conceding goals. That's the seventh time that they've conceded 3+ goals in their last 9 Premier League games.
And 8-10 in all competitions as well.
Unbelievable.
Because they lost 3-0 to Millwall in the Cup. What's weird about this is that, I think looking in, people have always been surprised that is a Premier League defence, the likes of Simon Francis and Steve Cook. And it looks like now, and you know, Artur Boric as well, it looks like now it isn't. But yet you don't see them going out. You know, they should be going out and buying experienced, proper Premier League centre-back. They've spent a lot of money in the last kind of year or so on the likes of Lewis Grabban, who never plays, Benik Afobe, who they bought for £10 million, who's second string to Callum Wilson. That is enough money to go out and buy two proper defenders, or a goalkeeper and a defender, which is what they need. Because whilst they score a lot of goals and they play great attacking football, this isn't sustainable. You can't concede goals at that rate and expect to maintain Premier League safety.
Yeah, very bad. One team that cannot stop conceding goals, and that's been the truth for about 7 years, I think, is Sunderland, Amar. They lost 3-1 to Stoke. The Sunderland Stadium of Light was pretty much empty by the 55th minute. The fans just... The football's awful. They rely entirely on Jermaine Defoe. They're conceding 3 goals on a regular basis to teams like Stoke. It's you can understand why the fans aren't particularly happy with what's going on.
Yeah, it must be exasperating for those supporters. You know, think back a couple of weeks ago, and they had a really great performance against Liverpool, showed plenty of character in that game, and got a draw. To then capitulate against Stoke in the way they did at home must have been really, really frustrating. I think Jermaine Defoe has been one of the few players who can hold his head up this season. The other one is Pickford, who's really kept them in it at times. But other than that, yeah, David Moyes, Sunderland, you know, they might as well just go down because they're just boring everyone, aren't they?
I mean, they're never going to just... you can't see that combination of manager and player suddenly turning into like a Europa League challenging team. It's just not going to happen. So you wonder what the end game is.
Yeah. One team that... I mean, you'd never think that Peter Crouch would have a resurgence of this type. You know, Jermaine Defoe's been playing well, but his old strike partner, Crouchy's been putting it in recently. This is most unexpected.
Well, Crouchy's been trying to leave the last couple of transfer windows and been denied a move, and now he seems like a key part of the Stoke's attack. I mean, they played pretty well against Chelsea, scored a couple of goals, lost 4-2, and it was Crouch who was causing the problems, winning the knockdowns, and then you've got Arnautovic, Shaqiri, and these talented players running off him. I think he won 18 headers at the weekend. That's ridiculous. Scored a goal as well. And like I said, he gives them a focal point, really, which other players they've had up there, Wilfried Bonny and the like, don't really give them. And Crouch, he's got a good touch, play it to his feet or play it to his head, knock it down, and then you've got Shaqiri or Arnautovic running off them. They can play some really nice football in the final third.
Imagine 6 or 7 years ago being told that Bojan, when he's coming through at Barcelona, was going to be putting a transfer request because he couldn't get in the team for Peter Crouch.
Yeah, and John Walters as well gets in ahead of him as well. Yeah. Remarkable.
Rather unexpected. The last Premier League game to cover off is Watford 0, Middlesbrough 0. Obviously, the game sort of focused in the build-up on honouring Graham Taylor, who passed away last weekend. Unfortunately, it was a truly awful game of football, Amar, wasn't it? It was both managers said as much in the post-match press conference.
Yeah, I think the occasion was obviously a huge occasion for Watford, a real family club, a football club, you know, with really mourning the loss of Graham Taylor, who was so intrinsic to their finest moments in the 1980s. So I think it was a real occasion that put a heavy cloud on the day, really. But, you know, putting that to one side, football-wise, Watford are struggling. Troy Deeney is struggling. When Troy Deeney is struggling to score, I think it's 1 in 14 now, then Watford are struggling as well. So, you know, they've really had a tough season. They're not making a go of it. They're not far above the relegation zone. I think they're just above where Leicester are at the moment.
Yep.
And they really need to get going. Otherwise, Matsari, I think, will end up in the revolving door of managers at Vicarage Road.
Yeah, on the other side of it, Stobes, Borough looking decent value to stay up. They seem to be picking up points, whereas earlier on in the season, they were playing decent, but not really getting many points.
Yeah, 4 points above the relegation zone. It feels like they're just about doing enough, like you said. Mm. They're picking up the draws here and there, the odd victory. They're organised defensively, which I think is massive if you're down at the bottom. They're pretty organised, better than the teams around them, certainly. If they can get a few more goals, I think they'll be fine. But certainly I wouldn't say at this stage that they're a safe bet to stay up, because, you know, they've only, it's their first season in the Premier League, and a slide starts and they could be in trouble. They're only a couple of defeats from being in the bottom three.
Let's move on to La Liga, and a huge result, George, this weekend is that Sevilla beat Real Madrid. 40-game unbeaten run gone for Zizou. Their defeat to Sevilla is the first time they've lost to a Spanish team away from home under Zinedine Zidane. It means that Sevilla go second, a point behind Real Madrid, although Real Madrid have a game in hand. How did Sampaoli mastermind this? Because Real Madrid have looked totally invincible no matter what the situation is.
And I think it just confirms what we all think anyway, is that Sampaoli is just a genius. I mean, he's got this Sevilla team playing in such a kind of mind-blowingly incredible way, brand of football. They press very high. They prevent teams from playing. They dominated possession yesterday, and in possession, their movement, their triangles, the way they pass the ball, I mean, they're probing, but they're also tidy. It's just absolutely fantastic to watch. Anyone who hasn't seen them playing this season, I assume will be watching a procession when they play against Leicester in the Champions League next month, so that'll be a good chance to do it. I think he is undoubtedly a Barcelona manager in waiting. I'm pretty, because Luis Enrique, to be honest, in my opinion, isn't doing a very good job at all. And whilst he probably wouldn't go mid-season because of what he's doing at Sevilla, it wouldn't surprise me at all if he's their manager next season. And there was a great kind of narrative to this after Ramos scored a Panenka penalty in the 3-3 draw in midweek in the Copa del Rey. And then it was his own goal in the 85th minute that was the equaliser, obviously before Jovetic got the winner. It was a fantastic game. You know, La Liga is back on for a few teams now.
Yeah, interesting that Zidane, after playing Sevilla in midweek, decided to go for a five at the back in this game. Brought in Nacho to counteract sort of Sevilla's high press, and it just didn't really work very effectively for most of the game.
I think it was a five at the back only because of the way that Sevilla played, because they didn't let them come forward. I think the plan is probably to play both Carvajal and Marcelo almost as kind of wing backs or wide midfielders in order to try and keep the ball up higher up in the pitch, and then have a back three who could kind of drop into those wide areas if need be. But then because of the style of Sevilla's play and their ability to win the ball back, that just didn't happen. And it turned out that it was Sevilla camped in Real Madrid's half for the majority of the game.
Do we think Keylor Navas could have done better for the goal?
Yes.
A little bit. Who let Stefan Jovetic score a winner? Where's he come from? How does...
You know what? It's great to see Jovetic score, actually. I mean, I think he's been, for about 7-8 years now, he's been one of the great maverick talents in Europe. And he's had huge injury problems. He was brilliant at Fiorentina. When he got that move to Man City, you're thinking this guy's going to be incredible in the Premier League. But it just never got going for him at Man City because of his injury problems. So, you know, really interesting to see him get this resurgence, opportunity for resurgence under a manager like Sampaoli. What a great start to his career there. I really, to his time there, I really hope he does well.
And that has to be one of the best ever league debuts.
Yeah.
Coming off the bench and scoring a 90th minute window to break a 40-match unbeaten run. I mean, that doesn't get much better than that.
He scored on his debut in the Copa del Rey as well, didn't he? So, yeah, well done, Stefan Jovetic. Sampaoli's got a touch with City rejects, if you consider Samir Nasri as well. In Serie A, Fiorentina upset Juventus, another big upset in Europe, by beating them, obviously. They didn't upset them by calling them names. Nikola Kalinic getting the opener in a fairly dominant display, Stobes. Juve's troubles always seem to be on the road, don't they?
Yeah, they've lost four games a season all away from home. And, you know, a month or so ago, you would say Serie A's done, Juventus are running away with it, 7 or 8 point lead. Now I think it's 1 point, is it?
Yeah,
With a game in hand.
But this result now means that Chelsea are currently the most dominant team in Europe's top five leagues. And who would have thought at the beginning of the season we'd be saying that? The Liga, the Bundesliga normally, and Serie A normally, you know, a procession for these big teams. You know, it's Chelsea who are leading the way this time. But yeah, I mean, it's an odd result this. Fiorentina actually having a good season this season. They scored a lot of goals. Roma, you know, have managed to get their form back on track, and they're now back on the chase.
Yeah, another team that's in the hunt at Inter. They've won five games in a row, but Paulo Sousa's Fiorentina upsetting Juve, so it'll be interesting to see how that develops in Serie A. Thanks very much to Greg Stobart, George Ellick and Amar Singh for joining me. George, you're back on Wednesday with the Football IQ. You've got a little debate pod of sorts sorted out for us.
Yeah, very excited about it as well. So it's a January transfer window special, how to win the window. I've got Greg Stobart, who's on it. So long as you're not bored of hearing his voice, then definitely make sure you download it. And also Ted Knutson from StatsBomb is in as well, and Simon Festinese, who's an agent for Base Soccer. So lots of really interesting insight. I'm excited to listen to it, having recorded it, and so should you, I hope.
Fantastic. Well, we can't wait for that. Please subscribe to the Squawker Talker, follow us on Twitter, and we'll see you very, very soon. Thanks very much for listening. Bye-bye.